Chapter 90. Simply divinely beautiful and peaceful, the great old trees are beyond everything. I believe nowhere in the world do you find such trees as in England. Clemens wrote to Twitchell. From the house you can see little, but spacious stretches of hay fields and green turf. Yet the massed, brick blocks of London are reachable in 3 minutes on a horse. By rail we can be in the heart of London, in Baker Street, in 17 minutes by a smart train in 5. Mail, however, would seem to have been less prompt. To the editor of the Times, in London. Sir, it has often been claimed that the London postal service was swifter than that of New York, and I have always believed that the claim was justified. But a doubt has lately sprung up in my mind. I live 8 miles from Printing House Square. The Times leaves that point at 4 o'clock in the morning, by mail, and reaches me at 5 p.m, thus making the trip in 13 hours. It is my conviction that in New York we should do it in 11. See Dallas Hill, N.W., to Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Dallas Hill House, Kilburn, N.W., London, August 12, 00. Dear Joe, the sage's prof. Fisk and Brander Matthews were out here to tea a week ago, and it was a breath of American air to see them. We furnished them a bright day and comfortable weather, and they used it all up, in their extravagant American way. Since then we have sat by coal fires, evenings. We shall sail for home sometime in October, but shall winter in New York, where we can have an osteopath of good repute to continue the work of putting this family in proper condition. Livy and I dined with the Chief Justice a month ago, and he was as well-conditioned as an athlete. It is all China now, and my sympathies are with the Chinese. They have been villainously dealt with by the sceptered thieves of Europe, and I hope they will drive all the foreigners out, and keep them out for good. I only wish it. Of course I don't really expect it. Why, hang it, it occurs to me that by the time we reach New York you Twitchells will be invading Europe, and once more we shall miss the connection. This is thoroughly exasperating. Aren't we ever going to meet again? With no end of love from all of us, Mark. P.S. August. 18. Dear Joe, it is 7:30 a.m. I have been waking very early, lately. If it occurs once more, it will be habit, then I will submit and adopt it. This is our day of mourning. It is 4 years since Susie died. It is 5 years and a month that I saw her alive for the last time throwing kisses at us from the railway platform when we started west around the world. Sometimes it is a century, sometimes it was yesterday. With love, Mark. We discover in the foregoing letter that the long European residence was drawing to an end. More than 9 years had passed since the closing of the Hartford House, eventful years that had seen failure, bereavement, battle with debt, and rehabilitated fortunes. All the family were anxious to get home, Mark Twain most anxious of all. They closed Dallas Hill House near the end of September, and put up for a brief period at a family hotel, an amusing picture of which follows. To J.Y. M. McAllister, in London. September 1900. My dear McAllister, we do really start next Saturday. I meant to sail earlier, but waited to finish some studies of what are called family hotels. They are a London specialty. God has not permitted them to exist elsewhere. They are ramshackle clubs which were dwellings at the time of the heptarchy. Dover and Albemarle streets are filled with them. The once spacious rooms are split up in two coops which afford as much discomfort as can be had anywhere out of jail for any money. All the modern inconveniences are furnished, and some that have been obsolete for a century. The prices are astonishingly high for what you get. The bedrooms are hospitals for incurable furniture. I find it so in this one. They exist upon a tradition. They represent the vanishing home-like inn of 50 years ago, and are mistaken by foreigners for it. Some quite respectable Englishmen still frequent them through inherited habit and arrested development, Many Americans also, through ignorance and superstition. The rooms are as interesting as the Tower of London, but older, I think. Older and dearer. The lift was a gift of William the Conqueror. Some of the beds are prehistoric. They represent geological periods. Mine is the oldest. It is formed in strata of old red sandstone, volcanic tufa, ignis fatuus, and bicarbonate of hornblende, superimposed upon argillaceous shale, and contains the prints of prehistoric man. It is in No. 149. Thousands of scientists come to see it. They consider it holy. They want to blast out the prints but cannot. Dynamite rebounds from it. Finished studies and sail Saturday in Minnehaha. Yours ever affectionately, Mark Twain. They sailed for New York October 6th, and something more than a week later America gave them a royal welcome. The press, far and wide, sounded Mark Twain's praises once more. Dinners and receptions were offered on every hand. Editors and lecture agents clamored for him. The family settled in the Earlington Hotel during a period of house hunting. They hoped eventually to return to Hartford, but after a brief visit paid by Clemens alone to the old place, he wrote to Sylvester Baxter, in Boston, New York, October 26, 1900. Dear Mr. Baxter, it was a great pleasure to me to renew the other days with you, and there was a pathetic pleasure in seeing Hartford and the house again. But I realize that, if we ever enter the house again to live, our hearts will break. I am not sure that we shall ever be strong enough to endure that strain. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Mr. and Mrs. Rogers wished to have them in their neighborhood, but the houses there were not suitable, or were too expensive. Through Mr. Frank Doubleday they eventually found, at 14 West 10th Street, a large residence handsomely furnished, and this they engaged for the winter. "We were lucky to get this big house furnished," he wrote McAllister in London. "Here was not another one in town procurable that would answer us, but this one is all right, space enough in it for several families, the rooms all old-fashioned great size." The little note that follows shows that Mark Twain had not entirely forgotten the days of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. To a neighbor on West 10th Street, New York. November 30. Dear Madam, I know I ought to respect my duty and perform it, but I am weak and faithless where boys are concerned, and I can't help secretly approving pretty bad and noisy ones, though I do object to the kind that ring doorbells. My family try to get me to stop the boys from holding conventions on the front steps, but I basely shirk out of it, because I think the boys enjoy it. My wife has been complaining to me this evening about the boys on the front steps, and under compulsion I have made some promises. But I am very forgetful, now that I am old, and my sense of duty is getting spongy. Very truly yours, S50. Clemens. End of this Project Gutenberg text of Letters Vol. 4, by Mark Twain. Mark Twain's Letters 1901-1906, arranged with comment by Albert Bigelow Payne, Volume V, XL, Letters of 1901, chiefly to Twitchell. Mark Twain as a reformer. Summer at Saranac. Assassination of President McKinley, an editorial in the Louisville Courier-Journal, early in 1901, said, "Remarkable transformation, or rather a development, has taken place in Mark Twain. The genial humorist of the earlier day is now a reformer of the vigorous kind, a sort of knight-errant who does not hesitate to break a lance with either church or state, if he thinks them interposing on that broad highway over which he believes not a part, but the whole of mankind has the privilege of passing in the onward march of the ages." Mark Twain had begun re-aching the lance very soon after his return from Europe. He did not believe that he could reform the world, but at least he need not withhold his protest against those things which stirred his wrath. He began by causing the arrest of a cabman who had not only overcharged but insulted him. He continued by writing openly against the American policy in the Philippines, the missionary propaganda which had resulted in the Chinese uprising and massacre, and against Tammany politics. Not all of his efforts were in the line of reform. He had become a sort of general spokesman which the public flocked to hear, whatever the subject. On the occasion of a Lincoln birthday service at Carnegie Hall, he was chosen to preside, and he was obliged to attend more dinners than were good for his health. His letters of this period were mainly written to his old friend Twitchell, in Hartford. Howells, who lived in New York, he saw with considerable frequency. In the letter which follows, the medicine which Twitchell was to take was plasmin, an English proprietary remedy in which Mark Twain had invested a panacea for all human ills which osteopathy could not reach. To Rev. Joseph Twitchell, in Hartford. 14 W 10th Street. Jan. 23, 01. Dear Joe, certainly. I used to take it in my coffee, but it settled to the bottom in the form of mud, and I had to eat it with a spoon, so I dropped the custom, and took my 2 teaspoonfuls in cold milk after breakfast. If we were out of milk, I shoveled the dry powder into my mouth, and washed it down with water. The only essential is to get it down, the method is not important. No, blame it, I can't go to the alumni dinner, Joe. It takes 2 days, and I can't spare the time. Moreover, I preside at the Lincoln birthday celebration in Carnegie Hall February 11, and I must not make 2 speeches so close together. Think of it, 2 old rebels functioning there, I as president, and Watterson as orator of the day. Things have changed somewhat in these 40 years, thank God. Look here, when you come down, you must be our guest. We've got a roomy room for you, and Livy will make trouble if you go elsewhere. Come straight to 14 West 10th. January 24. Livy says amen to that. Also, can you give us a day or two's notice, so the room will be sure to be vacant? I'm going to stick close to my desk for a month now, hoping to write a small book. If ever, Mark, the letter which follows is a fair sample of Mark Twain's private violence on a subject which, in public print, he could only treat effectively by preserving his good humor. When he found it necessary to boil over, as he did, now and then, for relief, he always found a willing audience in Twitchell. The mention of his private philosophy refers to what is man? Apostrophe. Privately published in 1906, reissued by his publishers in 1916. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. 14 W 10th January. 29, 01. Dear Joe, I'm not expecting anything but kicks for scoffing, and I'm expecting a diminution of my bread and butter by it, but if Livy will let me, I will have my say. This nation is like all the others that have been spewed upon the earth, ready to shout for any cause that will tickle its vanity or fill its pocket. What a hell of a heaven it will be when they get all these hypocrites assembled there. I can't understand it. You are a public guide and teacher, Joe, and are under a heavy responsibility to men, young and old. If you teach your people as you teach me to hide their opinions, when they believe the flag is being abused and dishonored, lest the utterance do them, and the publisher a damage, how do you answer for it to your conscience? You are sorry for me. In the fair way of give and take, I am willing to be a little sorry for you. However, I seem to be going counter to my own private philosophy, which Livy won't allow me to publish because it would destroy me. But I hope to see it in print before I die. I planned it 15 years ago, and wrote it in 98. I've often tried to read it to Livy, but she won't have it. It makes her melancholy. The truth always has that effect on people. Would have, anyway, if they ever got hold of a rag of it, which they don't. You are supposing, that I am moved by a large patriotism, and that I am distressed, because our president has blundered up to his neck in the Philippine mess, and that I am grieved, because this great big ignorant nation, which doesn't know even the ABC facts of the Philippine episode, is in disgrace before the sarcastic world. Drop that idea. I care nothing for the rest. I am only distressed and troubled, because I am baffled by these things. That is all. When I search myself away down deep, I find this out. Whatever a man feels, or thinks or does, there is never any but one reason for it, and that is a selfish one. At great inconvenience and expense of precious time, I went to the chief synagogue the other night and talked in the interest of a charity school of poor Jew girls. I know to the finest shades the selfish ends that moved me, but no one else suspects. I could give you the details if I had time. You would perceive how true they are. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.